This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview show edition of the Blue Monday podcast, a three times weekly show looking into all things Ipswich Town. I'm your host, Richard Woodward, and I'm delighted to welcome back the brilliant Harry from Bath. Harry, how's it going?
Hi, Rich. All good here. All good here. Quite weak.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a bit of a thumb twiddler, really, isn't it?
Yeah, not much for us to talk about. I'm not sure. Yeah. And Stoke was only a few weeks ago, so, I mean, what are we going to talk about?
I don't know. Yeah,
we can make plans for next season, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We could do. Yeah, I was thinking it felt a bit like an international break, but as I say, we may not have too many of those next season to worry about.
Well, we'll add those to the list of firsts
exactly.
That we'll have next season. Well, where do we start then? Shall we talk about fighting in the dugouts at Norwich City, or we'll talk about Norwich and Derby? Because both of them similar patterns to the games. I guess the outcome's very different. But the establishment of this diamond formation, a little bit more fight in the team, a bit of rotation for Derby, but the pattern of the game's really consistent, aren't they? And this 1 minute goal that we appear to be giving away, that needs to stop, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a sickener, it really is. You just know it's going to happen. I was watching the Derby game at home, and my partner was saying, she said, you don't want to know. And I just went, I was literally making a cup of tea. I literally missed the first couple of minutes. And she said, uh-oh. And I just went, you don't want to know. And I realized, oh, we've done it again, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so both of them avoidable as well. Both of them avoidable.
Utterly avoidable. We just are cold. We just went in cold. That's what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was so frustrating. But that said, interesting. I'm going to start with the Stoke comment, if I may, because I've got one from Derby as well. Stoke fan said, I saw a bit of the Norwich game at the weekend, and Ipswich didn't look bad after their early mistake. They were awful in the final third, bad crosses and bad pass choices like us, which we'll come on to. But they're looking a lot better than they were since Lambert has been there. The defence is certainly a lot better. And then Derby, there was some really telling comments from Derby. There's a very good Derby podcast, and I followed them on Twitter, and I was keeping an eye on them during the game on Wednesday night. Ipswich are not playing like a team who've given up on their season. They're putting up a fight. They turned the game into a scrap, and we are flapping around making daft mistakes under pressure. The thing I took from both of those was that we were, for the first time this season, we were starting to play games on our terms and not playing them on the opponent's terms. And that it gave me a sense of a personality of the team emerging, a sense of what might be next season. We always said it was going to take time to come together, but you can suddenly see glimpses, and it's not a false dawn. This is a proper sense of dawn, you know, that you feel right now we're getting an identity. And things cannot be as bad as they were 6 months ago. Surely, you know, we can now get a sense of constant improvement. So anyway, that's an initial thought.
Image of Paul Lambert as well, isn't it? You know, the tough, combative midfielder and also passionate as well. You know, the supporters are definitely buying into this and contributing. Last night, I could hear the Town fans through the stream that I watched on the red button. It was clear for everyone. A big old cheer when the goal went in as well. Everyone appears. We've been talking about things clicking, haven't we, the last few weeks? How the lone players needed to come in, have time to get up to speed. And it appears that maybe the Norwich game, albeit the result was pretty harsh and the goals that they scored were clinical, but otherwise we were really much in the game. That maybe Judge coming to the fore, which he has done. Keane, I thought, is starting to be a really useful focal point up front as well. Maybe this is the time, albeit I don't... We'll probably be asked questions about is it too little too late or can we still survive? But even if we don't, as you've kind of alluded to, setting up this way of playing, setting up this combative approach is only going to be useful when we need to struggle and toil in League One maybe next season.
Yeah,
and it also gives us hope as well. You know, it continues that hope. As soon as we give up on survival, the season's over and it's tough, isn't it? It's tough to sustain motivation and to avoid being... turned over. So it'd be great if we keep it going on as long as possible, wouldn't it?
You sense that hopefully longer year project under Lambert is beginning. No question about that. And what we're seeing now are the shoots starting to come up through the ground. So in a way, what happens this season in the kind of 3 to 5 year view is irrelevant. It would be lovely if we didn't go down and we could then regroup over the summer and stay up and push on. But if we do drop, well, we have, you know, we can still work around that if that is an obstacle. But there's lots to be hopeful for. I mean, simple things like I felt, you know, rather than being wedded to the passing out from the back, where we have felt we just didn't quite have the talent or the confidence to do that initially. You know, it's not being afraid to mix it, going a bit more direct now that we have a little bit more height and physicality in the team. It's and bearing in mind, what are we now, we're recording this Valentine's Day, it's only a couple of weeks since these players have come in, so you know, to see it suddenly starting to turn, it's a hopeful sign.
And can we say happy Valentine's Day to everyone, although they'll be hearing it tomorrow and it'll be too late, so hopefully you've got plenty of cards and chocolates and all that stuff. You have been a long term you've been giving us the insight that Colin Kwana's game is maybe more about the assists than everything else. We've got a question about his stature and heading ability, but an assist last night and a goal for Nolan as well, which I think is also maybe a useful, maybe a confidence booster for him, because he had a tough start against Norwich but grew into the game. But any thoughts on those two, or are you just going to say, well, I told you so?
No. Time, it just takes time on the training ground. It just takes time. And when you've got Nolan being coached by Lambert every week, as I say, I always bang on about the old covalent bonds, the level of understanding, the relationships building up. I mean, the way Nolan intercepted the ball. Derby were daydreaming for our goal in that early part of the second half. Nolan was alert. He got the ball. Not only when he passed it to Kwanner Kwanner was off, but Nolan was off like a hare as well. And that was the key to me. It was almost the run that Nolan made as much as anything else, because Kwanner had great composure on the ball. Of course, by then Derby was an attacking set piece for them. They were spread eagled and they couldn't get back quickly enough. So there was quality and alertness to it as well. But as I say, it's going to be these. We're going to keep seeing these little signs, things that weren't quite working, is what the Stoke fan was saying about it's not being good in the final third, that getting better and better and better. Going back to the Norwich game, I still think that if Pukki had played for us, we'd have won the game 2-1.
Yeah, I've had similar thoughts, and I've thought that myself as well. Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Just going, looking at the games chronologically, I don't know, just briefly on Norwich, I've written two things down here. One, it's a game I won't miss. I just hate it. I absolutely detest that game, and particularly the way it's been over the last few years with them. We won't dwell on Norwich supporters' side of things because there's no point. But the other thing which I would add is I felt that they gave us fewer problems than when we played Leeds and when we played West Brom.
Yep.
We might have said we were at a lower rep at that time, but I still think Norwich aren't all that. Now, they might make the playoffs.
Well, last night showed it, didn't they? They lost to Preston, didn't they?
Yeah. If you get amongst them, they are brittle. They can be got at. And the fact that we were able to dominate so much of the play, it just, you know, it's. I'm just not convinced, and it's not just bias. I think. We'll see how it goes. There's still a quarter of the season to run, and other teams are suddenly clicking. So we'll see.
Leeds have had a bit of a glitch. Not a given. Sheffield United maybe needed a bit of a kick up the arse, and that Villa game was that. And Norwich have had it generally quite easy. They've got a run of pretty winnable hashtag winnable games coming up, which might be helpful for us. But actually, if they come out of this and maybe have dropped a few points, it's confidence is going to drop, isn't it?
But you say, they've got a run of, as I say, hashtag winnable games, but Preston would have been a winnable game in their scheme of things.
And
Preston just got stuck in there. I always think they play a model of football very much in the image of Alex Neil. It's Scottish. It's in your face. It's high octane, intensive football. You could see Lambert might be trying to do a similar thing with us, and that Norwich couldn't live with it, and they were getting rattled at the end. It was
So we do have a question on Norwich. So let's not go too far on that line, but we're kind of alluding to the question, so we'll come back to that one. Did you say you had another point on Norwich? I wanted to quickly ask you about the kerfuffle on the bench at half-time.
I didn't have a problem with that at all. I really didn't have a problem at all. I think Lambert was within his rights to stand his ground against them. And it goes back to what we talked about last week, that there is a different... I do feel at that ground, we are made, for whatever reason, to feel like second-class citizens. And it comes through with the supporters, and Lambert wasn't prepared to take it from a club point of view as well. So in terms of the officials and the status of them, there is a feeling that they're lording it over us a little bit. And I think Lambert was... He didn't directly go in and say that, but he did in his post-match comments. He just said, he wasn't going to let this club get bullied or get walked all over. And I think he put his finger on something there. So no, fair play to him. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it lifted us a little bit as well, second half.
Nor was it a Mourinho-like calculated thing. I think it was sincere. I don't think he was trying to do it to take the pressure off. Mourinho would do that so that they would talk about him rather than the players.
I saw some tweets about that, and I don't think it was that.
No, it wasn't that at all. I just think he looked at the situation, saw what it was, and he decided, no, I'm not having this. Fair play to him.
Any final thoughts on Norwich or Derby, or should we head on to Stoke?
Anything else on Derby? Just we have to keep Alan Judge. And I was, I was fearful when I saw the starting 11. But we'll come on and talk, because we're going to move on and talk about Diamonds. And I thought, a huge praise for Chalobah, because everyone talks about the Diamond system, or with a narrow midfield, however you want to call it, 4-3-1-2, whatever, that the fullbacks come under a lot of pressure, which they do. However, the holding midfielder, it takes tremendous positional discipline and also alertness, both with and without the ball, in terms of how to get the geometry right. It can go badly wrong. And I just thought Chalobah had a phenomenal game. I just felt his mobility and his reading of the game, it just brought out all the right colours in him.
Good last night as well. I thought he started slowly on Sunday, but grew into the game certainly. In the beginning of the second half, he was immense. And also that kind of the Lambert kind of confronting Norwich with their kind of little sneaky little fouls and all that kind of stuff. When he was knocked over, I think it was it by Lewis, or I'm trying to remember who knocked you, or it might have been Buendia, wasn't it? And he's kind of sized up to him and head to head and all that kind of stuff. Got into Chalobah as well, and he can only benefit from learning from Lambert as well. His future might not be in that midfield position, it might be somewhere else, but I thought he's really grown into the season, and people, we've been long-term advocates of Chalobah. We accept that he's learning the game, you'll get the odd mistake, but I think most of the Blue Monday team, particularly us two, I think, we on this show, we've said that there's a player there, and I think people are starting to see it now.
Well, time and again, opposition fans, because you always see what they're saying on their forums about us, and they always say, after in post-match comments, Chalobah, he's good. They can see it.
Stoke friends say that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they said he was absolute. You could see my Stoke mate Paul, when we went to the game in December, his father, who'd seen Stanley Matthews playing, he'd seen Banks, he'd seen all the great players over the years. And he said afterwards, we were walking out of the stadium, and he said, Chalobah, he said, he's some player. He will be some player. That was the phrase he said. He is a thoroughbred, no question. Yeah.
Well, it's almost like I've set up a segue to take us to Stoke. and that's why I'm here, everybody. So 2-0 away defeat back end of last year. Just as a bit of a setup for this show, we've obviously spoken about Stoke players in quite a lot of detail in the last session. So what we'll probably focus on is there's a big change, obviously, in the dugout. So I think we'll talk about the kind of the last few weeks of Rowett's reign and Nathan Jones. There's been a formation change, which Harry has alluded to, so I think we'll pick up on that. We'll talk about some of the players that have come into the team, some of the players that have gone out of it, and we'll probably pitch it that way. So should we start with the end of Gary Rower?
Yeah.
We picked up, both of us, you in the home and me in the away end, that there was some disenchantment about the way that Rower was going on about things. And I think from day one, I've always had the sense that that job wasn't a good fit for Gary Rower.
No.
And I obviously the results weren't great. They were lower mid-table, I think, when he was sacked.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd won. I think they won one more game after they beat us, which was Bolton. And then turn of the year, they drew with Shrewsbury in the cup and he was gone. Any thoughts from your perspective, Harry, on Rower or anything that you've gleaned from the Stoke fans on that one? Presumably not a huge amount of disappointment.
No, there wasn't. But there is a wider comment to make here. One of them wrote, many believe the pressure from fans forced Rowett out. We saw that at the game. It was clear there was that sort of mood of hostility. It's difficult because he plays a counter-attacking type of football in a team which you would expect with the quality they have to dominate, and he recruited for that. But can I scope out a little bit, Rich, on this? Because there is a wider thing here, and I want to particularly to any of them, I know it is a tiny minority, but anybody's thinking, oh, Lambert's results have been similar to Hurst's, maybe we should be thinking of getting rid of Lambert. I just want to absolutely just take a sledgehammer to that now and kill it, because just looking at what Stoke have done, there's a case study here. There's a chaotic manager recruitment and player recruitment strategy going on there, and if they're not careful, they could do a Sunderland. 13 months ago, Mark Hughes was there. Since then, they've gone from an organised and shape-based system to Lambert, who's played energetic and on the front foot, as we've seen. Then you go to Rowett, who plays counter-attacking with wingers. And then they bring in Jones, who plays a narrow diamond system.
So you're saying there's no overarching strategy behind that in terms of the players? The players are left behind, aren't they?
Where do you go? I mean, they're talking, this comes up, the players are playing without any confidence at the moment. Not only that, but you're also the recruitment strategy then that goes with that. You've then got, who are they bringing in? They brought in in the summer, Ryan Woods, who is a holding midfielder or a box-to-box midfielder.
I feel really sorry for him.
But in a diamond, you just have one sitter, and that sitter isn't allowed to push forward. Mm. And Woods is a lot of his play is predicated on passing out wide. You've no width in a diamond, so where does he fit in? But more damningly, you've got McLean and James McLean, Tom Ince, who are wingers, and they've been recruited in the summer, and now you're thinking, oh well, this system doesn't need wingers. So what ends up happening? We'll come on and talk about it. But Nathan Jones, the manager, tries James McLean as a striker, and he plays Tom Ince in behind a front pair. Now Ince can play in behind a single striker, but it gets so congested in there when you've got there's so much traffic. He needs space in which to operate because a lot of his game is about pace. So you're bringing in players, you're changing the system. And this happened to Wigan a few years ago, and they ended up with the dog's dinner of a squad. I have flashing amber lights on Stoke at the moment in the way they're going about things. And already there are grumblings about Jones because he's trying to change to the diamond system mid-season. And it's a system really that needs a good pre-season to bed in if you're going to do it properly. And also playing it at League One Luton is very different to playing it in the Championship, I would say, as well.
With a club with Premier League aspirations, which have long but gone now, but definitely a team that thinks, well, that has the stature that thinks it should be up there. So Rower, not particularly missed, as you say, it's part of this, maybe this recent strategy of maybe names and managers rather than what their philosophy is about, which has confused the players. Nathan Jones comes in, a manager that with a really big reputation with Luton, I think was on the long list of managers that we considered as well in the summer. But we both have kind of picked up on this kind of, there's reeks of Hurst with this appointment, and I would hate for Nathan Jones to go down the same route, but it's not started well, has it? He's maybe had his Swansea moment when they beat Leeds in January, really early. No win in four now. And as you say, square pegs and round holes, and a formation that is being maybe applied to players that aren't quite up for it.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Nathan Jones, maybe.
Not only no winning four, Rich, no goal in four.
No goal in four, fine. Okay, we talked about that at the start, didn't we? And they've got personnel out there that should be scoring goals, haven't they?
Yeah. Shall we do the Hurst points? When I was going through the OK, brilliant forum, there was a pattern coming out. This might sound familiar. Okay, there are moments of naivety at this level, and his random experiments every week are worrying me. He's shoehorning players into his preferred system. I'd prefer he instilled an understanding of how he wants his players to play and not always chop and change. He looked like a rabbit in the headlights ever since the Shrewsbury FA Cup defeat. Playing players out of position, we mentioned about McLean being used as a striker, but the one that scared me most, there was a game where he criticised players, including both his strikers, Afobe and particularly Berahino. And then late in the game 2 weeks ago against, or was it last weekend against West Brom game, was it last weekend? They were chasing a goal, they were 1-0 down, he had Afobe on the bench, and instead of bringing Afobe on, he threw on Ryan Shawcross, the centre-back, as a late striker option to go up front.
Wow.
How old is Shawcross now?
He's early 30s,
centre-back, lacking mobility. Obviously, the thinking to put on a bit of physicality against a West Brom defence, you know, which are, you know, as we know, they're all huge units. But just think of how that felt for Afobe, the striker, and all the fans watching the game. It would have been a big local derby as well. It's a slightly scary parallel in terms of what happened with Bart. And it did cause a lot of alarm with a lot of Potters. One of them said, for example, will Jones be under pressure this season? It certainly hasn't been a very good start, but they think he has been brought in for the long haul, so they don't think bringing in a fifth manager in 14-15 months isn't going to happen. But the parallels with Hurst are just laid out there for everyone to see. It's quite scary.
So Ben's phrase he used on the Naked Footy show with Hurst was that he did a hard reset. Do you think that it's a case of riding the rest of the season out, Jones getting to know the players, and then it'll go again in the summer?
I think so. Yeah, I think there is a huge rebuild. I think a good few are out of contract. I think they're going to try and get rid of it. Yeah, there is a major rebuild to be done. Yet again, we seem to say this every week. Two of the players he has brought in, to be fair, have done really well. He's brought Sam Vokes in, the striker, and he's brought Danny Bath in, the centre-back. And those two have, you could say, well, against just putting the Hurst thing to one side, he's brought in a couple of players with a bit of proven quality and a bit ability at this level, so he hasn't been naive in underestimating the Championship. So in that sense, there is that positive side. And also, although we're going to talk about the Diamond, against Wigan during the week, they drew nil all. For the first half hour, Wigan were pouring through them. One of them described them being they had more holes than a Swiss cheese. They said that there was simply no space. There was too much space, I should say, for the Wigan players to be able to pour through. He did change after about half an hour to a 4-5-1. So instead of having Afobe up front with Vokes and Ince in behind, he flicked them out to the wings. So he had Afobe on the left and Ince on the right, and that seemed to stabilise the thing. But although we're going to talk about Diamonds, and it could all be a bit narrow on Saturday, there is every possibility that he might decide to abandon that and just say, we just simply can't do that at the moment, and come back to it later in the season or come back to it next summer. Let's see.
And the Diamond came back for Wigan, didn't it? The 0-0 this week.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Let's quickly just go through some of the players where we think there's kind of square pegs and round holes. The first one that I've got written down here, who played in a midfield three against us in a 2-0 defeat earlier in the season, is Sam Clucas, who appears to have... The left-back situation's a weird one, because I remember us waxing lyrical about Peters, who was the left-back, when we played them. And I think, did he get an assist, or was he was definitely part of the build-up of at least one of the goals.
He was.
Really experienced player, really highly rated as well, really liked there. He was allowed to leave. No replacement comes in. They were linked with Knudsen right near the end of the window. Nothing happens. And you've got Sam Clucas, who I think has played for left back for Swansea maybe, but is more of a midfielder now.
Yeah,
that one. Can you talk to us? Talk to us about
Is a left-sided midfielder. I mean, first of all, going back to the chaotic transfer strategy, you've brought a manager in who's going to play the Diamond, and you let your only major left back go. And as we said earlier, if you're playing Diamonds, the full-back positions, you need to actually have them properly nailed down, because otherwise you will be carved open. Clucas, he's a left-sided midfielder, and his form seems to have disintegrated. He didn't play too badly against Wigan, but I think that's because he had some protection in front of him. But they described him as turning attack into defence. He can't even do the basics. His first touch has been horrendous. His passing is dreadful. He's been very weak. Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy is the word. He makes no attacking runs. Because, again, as a fullback in the Diamond, you've got to gauge your position line so carefully, because if you go up the field...
Oh, you're so exposed, aren't you?
You're so exposed. You're not relying on either your wide midfielder or the holding player to come across, because there's nothing else there. It's such a... I described it as it's a bit like playing with nitroglycerine, this system. It really is. If you get it wrong, it can blow up quite badly. I mean, one of them, the most brutal comment was that when somebody said there's dustbin at left back would be no worse than Lucas. They've really been hammering him, but he's a left midfielder playing out of position, and on his inside when he plays, Bruno Martins-Indy sits just inside him, and Martins-Indy has a habit of switching off in games as well. Indy plays over Shawcross and Ashley Williams. Williams is pretty much out of the picture now. One of them compared him to a milk float. He's kind of, in terms of his pace, he seems to have really in your mid-30s you can go downhill really quickly, and I think Williams, this is what's happened with Williams. So you either have Shawcross and Bath and Klukas as a left back, or Martins-Indy as a left back, I should say, or you have Shawcross and Martins-Indy and Klukas as a left back, if I get it right. And so he doesn't even have a good centre back inside who he can rely on, because Martins-Indy, as I say, is regularly accused of switching off. And he played at left back, if I'm not mistaken, against Hull. In their previous game to the West Brom,
his old club, wasn't it? Was he?
It was. Hull? So, yeah. It was Hull. This is Martins-Indy playing left back, and he struck out a lazy left leg, which gave away a free kick just before half time, which Hull scored from. So, either way, if it's Klukas or if it's Martins-Indy, I should say, at left back, there is a real vulnerability there, because this is what happens when you sell the only one you've got there. But I do feel for Klukas; his form seems to have really fallen apart.
The only other kind of, we talked about Williams very quickly, and I think that kind of drop off of his form and his pace was there. I think he still had it going on in his head, because were quite isolated, our strikers, against him. But there's a change at right back. I'm just noticing I've got the team from the 2-0. Is Tom Edwards now at right back? Is that now a
Edwards at right
change?
Back. He had to be substituted early for precautionary against Wigan, because he hurt his elbow. Very good. They like him. You see, the contrast, when you've got a fullback who knows what they're doing in the diamond, it's brilliant. But when you're putting in somebody who's a makeshift, it just amplifies the risk. Edwards is a natural right back. He's a 20-year-old youth product. Really good. A very good crosser of the ball. They think he should be taking corners as well. He's a breath of fresh air, but he is naive, and again, he's never sure when to get tight or to drop off, and there is a risk that he's a penalty or a foul waiting to happen if he gets isolated. He's just a 20-year-old youth product who's getting there. He doesn't always raise his head to look for options, and his crossing can be inconsistent. He can either put in brilliant or woeful crosses, but of course, when you don't have any protection in front of you, you're trying to work out where you should be. And similarly, the player who replaced him on Wednesday, who came off the bench, was Moritz Bauer, who came in last January, 12 months ago, Austria international, and he flatters to deceive. He looks great. He gives off the right vibes. Who was the winger we had who had the really blonde hair?
Pringle.
There's a touch of Pringle about him. That's it. He looks very. Oh my God!
You can't
dynamic.
Stop.
Absolutely. Sorry. He looks. He looks the business. But he's actually one of them described Bauer as a speedboat with no driver, which I thought was quite nice. He's great at bombing down the flanks, but how many goals does he actually create? And his positional play actually is even more suspect than Edwards. I think Edwards is above Bauer for that reason in the pecking order, and he can get pulled away from his man too easily. But they are right backs. That's what they do as a job. So there's less of an opportunity there, and they will get up and down the field a bit more. But again, if they're playing the diamond, that they can again, you can get in behind them, as it were, particularly with the defence. Yeah.
Bit in the squad that I'd kind of written down here is in the 2-0 defeat, as I mentioned before, there was a midfield three of Allen, Klukas and Woods. Let's talk about Woods in this sitting role and Allen just in front of them, because to me, Woods is a really solid championship box to box player, but he wants to move forward with the ball. To me, it seems like Joe Allen is there kind of right. Well, you can bring it to the halfway line. We were talking about this before we started. You bring it up to the halfway line, and I'll take it from here. And that to me limits the ability of Woods to affect the game. Is that fair enough? Allen, as well. Yeah. Just to quickly talk about Joe Allen, because obviously he scored a really excellent goal against us in the 2-0. And I was expecting to be hearing his name every week. But what's the story there? Is he kind of faded a bit?
It's the old balance thing again. If you've got a midfield, you're playing a diamond, you've got to try and get the roles are incredibly precise, both with and without the ball. People need to know what they're doing. Because if you're in the wider roles, which Allen and Etebo have been, Etebo seems to be getting it more than Allen. But Allen, you know, the question is, what is he? They've no idea what type of midfielder Allen is. He has played, him and Woods have both alternated in the sitting role in the diamond.
Okay.
The player who really should be in the sitting role of the diamond and who's injured is Charlie Adam.
Okay.
Because he can do that role in his sleep. He can sit, he can break up play, he can just go around knocking bits out of people.
Like Glenn Williams at Villa.
Villa, exactly that. That's what they need, but they don't have that. So therefore they're having to improvise. So for Allen, the problem with Allen in the sitting role is he lacks discipline chasing the ball, and he will go for he'll win the ball and then he'll go tearing off after because that's part of his game. He's a bit of a terrier. He's good at breaking up play, but mobility is a key part of the game. Woods has the same problem because really, if you're in the sitting role in a diamond, you pretty much have to sit. Partly because there's so much traffic in front of you, it's quite a narrow system that you really should be sitting and then laying it off and playing it cleverly. Allen's problem is more the fact that he lacks the positional discipline, whereas Woods' problem is that when he wins the ball, he doesn't have the width which he would have had at Brentford to be able to spray the ball wide and also then do what Allen did, which was to break forward.
Yes, so go and pick up the ball later on, yeah.
Exactly that. And they were saying about Woods, they said he's on tricky ground given the manager's weather to a diamond in the long term. He's likely to receive the ball and keep it moving, but every time he gets to the halfway line, he turns towards his own goal, runs back with the ball and passes it even deeper. There's this thing at the moment where he's playing that kind of game, but you know, literally the ball is just, he's almost like a wall. The defender gives it to him and he gives it back. Partly because he just doesn't have the angles, he doesn't have the players, the midfield movement isn't there because the players are still getting used to it and there isn't going to be the width. Whereas you think when he was at Brentford, he had Josipsson hammering down one side, there were wingers and fullbacks marauding up the field, he had loads of angles and options. So it's not a criticism of Wood, but it's a criticism of a team just getting to work with the new way of playing.
And he's not going to, I guess people out there will be saying, well, maybe he should be going direct, but he's been brought through at Brentford where the culture is short passing and on the ground, very dynamic. You can't suddenly expect a player like that to get right, well, launch it, because that's not what he's there to do. And it felt like a bit of a desperate signing for Stoke. It felt like this is a marquee kind of championship player who's come through and done really well for Brentford. It would be a real sign of intent, but we don't know where to play him. And I bet he's gutted that he didn't go to Swansea.
It's funny you say that. You've absolutely nailed it, Rich. Because interestingly, there is the thing of signing names, which goes back to the flawed strategy earlier.
It's Tom Ince, isn't it? I mean, phobia as well.
But they actually said it about Joe Allen. They quoted that. They said they brought him because they felt, look what we've done. We can have a Wales international who did brilliant at the Euros, kind of thing. He's a marquee player.
He's signed from Liverpool as well.
Exactly. You know, great. But where does he fit in? Yeah. You know, they've ended up reducing him to being a player with a good engine. It's funny. It is funny. The other thing about this strategy is that as the players lose form and identity, it's absolutely shaving millions off their transfer value.
Great show. So one player that played on Tuesday who wasn't in the team from our 2-0, Etebo, can you tell us a bit about him? I don't know if we spoke too much about him.
Etebo's interesting. He's a player. He was a Nigerian international in the World Cup, and he's athletic. And actually, they feel he gets the diamond better than the others. He's able to work out the angles. He knows where he needs to be, both with and without the ball. He's primarily a defensive midfielder. That's his instinct. But he's taken him a while to adjust to the rigors of the championship, if I can put it like that. One of them said he's great at running with the ball in a straight line, but that's it. His passing is poor. His touch is heavy. It comes to nothing when he gets the ball. Good intentions, but no end product. But he is one of the midfielders who is able to work the diamond, because the trick with it is to find space and to to move the ball with some tempo. You intricately move it up the field, and he's able to do, he's one of the players who's able to read the system really, really well, and therefore he is able to link play, but they've only seen glimpses of it so far. So again, it could well be that that's the team coming together, but he has got a bit of pace. He's quite an athletic player, and forward, although he's primarily a sitter, so if they do go to a back three, he would be one of the two sitting. You could probably see him sitting alongside, or probably alongside Woods with Allen in front. I was impressed with them in the World Cup, I have to say.
Is a back three a possibility? You mentioned it there. Is that...
They did play a back three against Leeds. The one win they had, which was similar to our Swansea win. Now, it was the reason they did that, it was desperate measure, it was early July. It was just at the time of Spygate with Bielsa, because the Stoke fans were singing win when you're spying, you only win when you're spying, which I thought was fantastic. Yeah. They changed to a back three then, because at the time they had Shawcross and Williams and Martin Zindi as the back three. They didn't have Danny Bath, we haven't mentioned. And the only way they felt that they could actually play, because Shawcross and Williams in a back two is trouble. So by having them as a three, it meant that they were actually able to get some defensive balance to the team. So that's the only time they've used a back three. They won't use it against us. I think it was a one-off. And it also would have thrown Bielsa if he had been spying. The other thing. He wasn't expecting that, so which was quite good.
It's like our 4-4-2, which obviously... Yeah. That's
what did for Hurst. That's what
they knew that it was coming.
Poor Hurst.
We could have played any formation that night, Harry.
Oh dear God, we were there. We were standing beside each other watching it. It was grim. They could have. It was, but for Hurst to say that, I wanted to give him a hug when I read that.
Poor Paul. Oh mate.
It wasn't that, Paul. It wasn't that. It really wasn't. Oh God. Quick one-liner on Danny Bath, who has come in. Can I mention him?
I was going to do the signings, but yeah, go for it.
Is that okay? Because we're noodling around the defence. Bath is interesting. He's a Shawcross upgrade rather than a partner. He's similar to Shawcross in that he's a leader. He'll organise the defence. He doesn't necessarily have a huge amount of pace, but he is more mobile than the other two.
He's a bit younger, presumably.
Well. Yeah, he's less slow. He's 28, and he came from Wolves. I remember he played well there.
We were linked with him.
I wouldn't have been surprised if Mick would have liked him, actually, because the thing about him was that he's not a technical player. He was very much in the Kenny Jackett mould, and one of them said he likes a hoof. You know, he's not a footballing defender.
If I can bring it out,
he's not going to bring it out. But he does the basics very well. He doesn't seem to make daft errors. So I think he's been bought in for next season. You know, if you could say we're hoping to have Judge next year, Bath will definitely be there next year. And a quick one-liner on Butland. He's not all he's made out to be. They were saying that he's regressed into a championship standard keeper. Fine shot stopper, but he's not commanding his area, and that they were saying there's so much to complain about at the moment that Butland's appalling displays are going under the radar. He's panicking under simple crosses, and he can't stop routine shots or set pieces. The first whole goal that was scored against them, I saw it, was eminently saved. There is a bit of a weakness on the left side. Low shots to the left is a problem with him. But they were saying that his poor kicking, his kicking has never been a strength, but his command of the area. He's no longer, you'd be thinking of a top six team with the England connections and all the rest of it. They're saying that he is regressing,
he's
just to put that
matching
in.
Matching his circumstances.
Yeah.
Is there a possibility, because we would know whether Jones is going down the Hurst route if Saturday we see Adam Federici in goal, or... Who's the other backup keeper they've got?
No, I think it would be Federici. It would be Federici.
I think is the other one.
Yeah, Haugard is the other one. I'd reckon it would be Federici.
So Butland's dropped. There's your. Yeah. There used to be 10 lessons of Hurst.
You draw up the list of them exactly. The amber lights, a series of amber lights, and they just incrementally get redder as you go further up the list.
The doomsday clock. So another, just another player and his role in this new diamond system that I wanted to pick out was Tom Ince. Who scored in the 2-0, was, I think, playing out wide right, if my memory serves me.
Correct, that's correct, yes.
And is now the tip of the diamond. How's that playing out for him?
Well, they've two options at the tip of the diamond. You've got Tim Ince, you've got Bojan, who has come back into the picture now after under the new manager. And I think, talking to my Stoke friends, Bojan basically, it's almost like Jones is trying to build the diamond system around Bojan, because as a playmaker in behind a front two, he's perfect. However, Ince is the alternative, and Ince, I think, started in there against Wigan the other night. this always makes me nervous to say, because we've talked about this with Joao the other week and Ferguson. He's the only player. Here we go. Here's the amber light. I'm sorry. It worries me. I've written that in brackets, actually. He's the one player we have with pace. I hate saying that because that seems to be what does us every time.
But he'll be up against Chalobah, a really refreshed Chalobah, you know?
Exactly. So we might be able to just put him in his cage. The problem with it is one of them said Tom Ince plays for Tom Ince FC.
Yes. I think that's always been the case, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. It would help if someone told him to play in a diamond and not just play for himself. And the other huge criticism is the defensive work rate. And particularly in the diamond is, I suppose you could say as a playmaker, you've got a little bit more permission. But if you're trying to press and chase, because it's a high tempo system, you need all the three up front to be closing down and pressing defenders for the ball, turn over the ball in the final third of the field. It doesn't happen. The word anonymous goes missing. And then when he does have to track back when he's playing out wide, he kind of goes through the illusion. Several of them said this. He goes through the illusion of tracking back, so he'll run, but he will not put his put his body on the line.
He'll be nearby. He'll be watching on,
and he'll make it look as if he's trying, but he won't risk injuring himself. Is the criticism they come out with?
He kind of feels like a less functional Tom Lawrence, which you can basically see why Derby sold him, because you don't need two of those players, do you? You can only carry one kind of. Fair weather footballer, but I wonder whether he's one of these, and I kind of maybe endorsing your amber light here, whether he's one of those players that can turn it on against the lesser teams because he maybe gets more time and space, or I don't know, maybe he thinks I've got a chance here.
In the December game, we were watching it, and I was just thinking, I shouldn't have thought this. At around 35 minutes or whatever it was, I was thinking, Ince has been quiet. This is really good. We've kept him quiet. And then, bang, you know, he suddenly wakes up, and then we're in trouble. He is that type of player who will suddenly come alive. And so you cannot drop your guard against him for that reason. The one they really want to see in there, though, is Bojan. And the issue with him, if he does play, is that the expectations on Bojan must be curtailed by his lack of game time.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to build fitness. But I think long-term, again, if you've got Danny Bath at the back and if they keep Bojan in the summer, I mean, his pedigree, Roman Barcelona, you know, he's phenomenal. They think he will start at the tip of the diamond as soon as Jones deems him ready. Great pass spotter. He's a perfect playmaker for that system. You know, he can look at the clever runs. He can see the space coming, etc. But doing it mid-season in the cold January, February foot slug of a championship season, you know, it's a lot to ask straight away.
Can they do it in a cold weekend? Yeah. Weekend Stoke,
exactly. Oh dear. They think at the moment, because the thing is so nascent, they're saying he gets the ball in the final third, but there's no movement for him. One of them said you could actually have Xavi pulling the strings in this team with no success. They're still learning the system, you know, they still haven't cracked it yet. But they think they're more positive when he plays because he's intelligent enough to either see clever runs or even to make runs himself. Because we'll come on and talk about Vokes in a minute and we look at the strikers. So that's as I say, either it'll be if they play the diamond, it'll be Bojan. Or it'll be Ince sitting in behind.
I was going to go straight to the strikers, actually.
So let's
do that now, because two physical strikers good in the air, I would suggest, particularly Vokes. The goals have dried up. And this system, it doesn't surprise me, because these are two strikers, a phobia more than Vokes, I suspect, who wouldn't mind the ball played through to him. But these are players that will be demanding crosses, won't they? And it's reliant on the fullbacks to get to bomb on. Yeah.
In the circumstances when they don't have a left back, it's relying on a fullback to bomb on the right side, because there's been very little. I mean, Martin Zindi, if he plays out there, he's a defender. It's like I always go back to Chambers, brilliant covering at right back, but primarily your inclination is where you play. And if you're a centre back out there, you're not going to see centre backs marauding. They just don't do it.
But Joe Allen isn't going to drift out wide thread across him. Well, maybe he is. So is that fair? Is it?
Yeah, no, it's a fair comment. It is. Vokes, again, is being brought in for that. He is a focal point. And, you know, particularly in the Championship where you're going up against, you're butting up against units.
James Collins.
You need a unit to go on your side. The problem, though, with Vokes, they like him. They didn't. One of the first quotes I saw was, "I didn't realize what a unit Sam Vokes is." You know, he's the ultimate unit. The problem, though, is he wins lots of headers when they do, even if they're not wide crosses, even if they come if angled crosses from midfield. The second balls he's generating aren't being picked up. He needs help up front. You need a striker who's on his wavelength. And one of the matches you said, because as I said, they haven't scored pretty much, if I'm not mistaken, since he's arrived. Vokes has played three games. So he's played Hull, West Brom and Wigan, and he hasn't scored.
Wow. The
team haven't scored since he went in. Yeah. But they've said he's hardly had a decent scoring opportunity since arriving. They don't think he's a prolific scorer himself. He will get a few.
He's never been, though, has he?
No, but he's an enabler for the others. So either his partner or whoever's breaking through from midfield to actually, you know, to, as I say, someone like Bojan making the clever runs. So the plan B, as I say, is a phobia. But the problem with the phobia is that he's struggling. It's a question of form with him. He needs to be playing in a system where, again, he gets plenty of service and support. So ideally, they think the diamond is set up for him because, you know, playing with a strike partner, he could never play on his own. And they think it might be a question of time. Maybe he'll thrive having a proper target man, but his touch has been poor. One of them described him even playing hospital passes to himself. He plays a ball and then he tries to recover it, and then he realizes, you know, he goes crunching into a defender. I think he's lost. It's a form and confidence question. So much so that in a slightly Hurst-esque move, Jones decided to try James McLean as a striker, and we have to mention this. I'd be stunned. It was abandoned very quickly. That certainly against Wigan they didn't do it. They did it for a couple of weeks. Playing McLean up front is hopefully an experiment which went wrong and won't be repeated. The problem with when you play McLean up front is he's technically not very good. His ball control isn't great. He's a winger who drills crosses in. He's good when the game becomes stretched, but he is incredibly left-footed. So it's fine if you're a winger and you're left-footed. You can try and show him inside, but generally, you know, he's quite athletic and he will run. But you need two good feet as a striker. So as a centre-back, all you need to do is show him onto his right foot, and you've got him. And so therefore, you know, part of the reason why, again, the goals haven't been coming, things breaking down when he's on the ball. He's good in terms of making runs and physicality, and he's also, unlike others, and they would put probably Afobe and Berahino into that group, he's willing. He will work hard. So he is, in that sense, he's wholehearted, but just a bit limited. Whereas Afobe is probably more talented, but struggling for form. And Berahino...
he played, didn't he?
I think they've written him off. It's the fans have now. They're past the point of thinking he can become good. I think the hope he had was that Raut was trying to rebuild him. But the sense is that... what am I saying? He may well come back on again. But the sense is that he's very much out of the picture now. He's not trusted. They said he seems to be getting a truce offered by some because he looks lively and will run around. There was an issue which came up, which was reported on the Old Cake, and it came up, I think, in the local media as well, that he was quite happy to take a fine for coming late down for breakfast or for a meal.
Right, okay.
That's not that, you know, just the mentality.
It's bigger than the club, or the rules don't apply to me.
Exactly that. You know, you just cannot do that as a player. One of them said that some strikers are great at arriving late in the box. Berahino just arrives late, which is, you know, really quite
damning.
Takes his
fine and doesn't care.
Yeah. He's slightly less poor than last season, but that bar was set so low that it's hardly praiseworthy. So I reckon it'll be Vokes and Afobe up front, I would have thought.
Because there's scant options otherwise, is there?
There's scant options otherwise at the moment. Certainly it'll be Vokes and one of the others. I don't think it'll be McLean. So that's where they are. As I say, less than the sum of their individual parts, but very much, you know, very much a work in progress. And I won't use Ben's W word, which ends able, but we're not allowed to use that. It's banned on the Blue Monday podcast.
It is,
but
if you put a hashtag in front of it. That's how I get it. Oh,
that's clever. So therefore, it doesn't become that. But it is
hashtag Coventry.
It's a game. Let's just say it's a game that's not losable. Do it that way. Anyway,
good stuff. Have we missed anything that you wanted to cover there on Stoke? I think we've done really well there, actually.
I think we've covered it all. No, I think we've talked about Jones and Hurst. We've talked about how dangerous the diamond system is, and the fact that their transfer strategy, it's all kind of out of sequence. I mean, the other team who did very briefly, Fulham, when they got relegated and McGath came in, and then he was replaced by Kit Simons. They also used the diamond. And I remember this. I looked up my notes on this from 2015, whenever it was. And they said they compared the Fulham team, they described it was a bit like the trooping of the colour, marching right, up the field into a defence. And the way the Stoke players are describing their system as well, it's the same thing. It's just this very prosaic way of operating. While the players just don't know the angles, they don't know what's happening. And the other comment, as I say, the other danger is with it, the lack of confidence that breeds. And as one of them said, if one piece of the jigsaw falls apart, our lack of pace and physicality at the back are exposed, and then it's Russian roulette time. So they can get picked off as well. So, you know, this, I don't want to be too optimistic, because we every week, I wrote this down as well, said every week we say that there's a weakness to exploit. We never seem to be able to exploit it, but at least we can point them out. I think there are actually, you know, as we're getting better and as we are growing a little bit more, you know, that we can get after this lot. I really think we can.
There's not much we can do about Ipswich's quality or application, but I think every week, and this is totally down to you, Harry, we always find something that you see in the game. So Norwich, we definitely discussed between us that our best bet was to attack them up the pitch, didn't we? And second half particularly, we absolutely did that. Now, if we had Pookie in the team, we could have maybe converted some of those chances. So all we're here to do is highlight where we think the opposition's good, where there are weaknesses. It's up to Mr. Lambert to make it happen, isn't it? But
yeah, it is.
You've done the due diligence.
Yeah.
Should we do some questions?
Yep, go for it.
I've had a quick nose through these. Let's see how many we can get through. And let's see if we can get some themes as well. Seabass Speak, I'm going to call it. Do you think a relegation can be a good thing? Maybe the McCarthy era made people want a reset and thought a trip to League One may give us back a winning mentality. With Lambert in charge, I think that mentality will happen. It's just about the TV money drop. Something like 7 million to 700k. Any thoughts? I mean, we've been skirting around the topic of relegation for some time, and I suspect we'll be mentioning it in passing for the rest of the next few weeks. And when it happens, I think we'll probably drill into more about what it means. But any thoughts on maybe whether the McCarthy era has made people accept relegation just for this idea of a reset, and that League One might be blessed relief after a few years of toil in the Championship, it's fair to say.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kieran McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a very good question. It's, I don't know. It's the, I think keeping Lambert to me was always more important than whether or not we stay up. Because if you take a 3 to 5 year view, I think in that sense we can come back again. The problem with the McCarthy mix era was that we were kind of, it was like a half life. You know, we were surviving. We were surviving on gruel. Exactly. Yeah. And it was, you think, yes, you can stay in the league, you can play Derby and Forest and all these other teams every season. But you're going to have to, you know, it was a Billy Grant from the Brentford, the Besotted website, once said Ipswich are a hard nut to crack under McCarthy. And that probably defined us for about 5 years. You know, and that's not, you know, let's go out and see if anyone can crack us or not every week. So it's a good question. I think the reset, in a way, relegation to me is subordinate to Lambert being given the time to put, we can see the fruits of it starting to come through, to start to put his model of football in place, and hopefully we can mitigate the impact of the loss of revenue. That's my sixth word. I don't really agree.
There's some stuff about Evans there in terms of getting the stadium full. Do you know, the revenue loss to me is, I guess Evans may not agree, but I'd rather we figure out a way to get Portman Road full and an atmosphere in the ground than maybe make up for shortfalls in revenue, particularly if the intent is to bounce back. But it's maybe a bit of a financial risk.
You're spot on. That's what Huddersfield did. Huddersfield, in the season they got promoted out of the Championship, they dropped the season tickets to a very low price. They said, well, the revenue, the gate money is subordinate to the opportunity. I think that was under Weber. They don't need to do it at Norwich because they fill the ground every week anyway, so Weber doesn't need to do it there. But it was a definite part of the Huddersfield strategy. Let's get the ground rocking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one other thought as well, which is a little bit controversial, but I've always thought that McCarthy did a good job. We can't, there's no getting away from that point. But but him being the kind of be all and end all behind the scenes meant that Evans was probably not aware of the extent of how important McCarthy was to everything until you take him away and realise there is literally no foundations at all to how we operate. Yeah. The academy is kind of its own thing over there. There's no kind of, you know, there's a bit of a link through Klug and Lee O'Neill was around, obviously. But now, I think, removing the big kind of monolith that was McCarthy, was all, you know, the big thing for us, actually means that we've maybe put in more stable foundations behind the scenes that mean that the manager maybe isn't as important. I think we've talked about that before, but would you agree with that?
I'd agree with that. I think, to be fair, I did analyse it once, and when you looked at the number of youth players coming through per team, and Mick was no better or no worse than the others, because he did progress players through the
youth system. I think he was underrated in that respect, but it appeared to be a strategy for moving players in. It was kind of, he was all right in training, well, we'll stick him on the bench then.
Stick him and see what he looks like. I mean, there've been exactly that, but it was always Mick was cautious. He was risk averse, and that was influenced all his decisions. I think on that, one thing that did occur to me, I always go back to that 3-1 defeat we had at Fulham in the sunshine when the fans were digging Mick and digging Evans out in the same game. No. It was a Fulham game a couple of years ago in the sunshine. It was a late game. It was around Easter. We lost 3-1. No, it was a season. I'm not even sure. They were lost in the playoffs that year. Christoph Berra got a late consolation goal for us.
Was it 3-1? I thought it was 4-1.
It was 3-1.
It might be 4-1.
It might have been 4-1.
They absolutely destroyed us, actually.
They destroyed us anyway. Exactly. It was when Jukanovic was running riot. Yeah. Great fun. But the point of that game was the way Mick was getting hammered as well as Evans. And I always wonder if Evans hid behind Mick.
Yeah.
It's a criticism I have of Evans that he never protected Mick, whereas going back to, it's an old parallel, but when fans were digging up Bobby Robson way back in the early 70s, just after he arrived, it was a famous United game, I think, where we were beaten and the fans were giving Bobby some jip, and Mick Mr. John stepped in and apologized to Bobby, and he showed some proper leadership at the time.
He did.
And I felt, listening to the way Mick was getting hammered, I felt whatever else about Mick, okay, the football might have been puritanical, but you know, where was the leadership coming from within the club? Ian Milne was stepping up, bless him, and saying all the right things as much as he could, but it really needed to come from the owner. But that's going off on a tangent, I suppose. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. This is the question I alluded to at the start, from Super Friends. The latter part of the question, but I'll read the whole thing. Given the performances versus Derby and Budgies, should we take inspiration from the Budgies turnaround this season, and B, are we better suited to playing better teams? And what chance, this is kind of the third part that I was alluding to, what chance that our defeat to Norwich will set them off on a bit of a slump? Because I think we maybe shocked them a little bit, and I think we got up at them on Sunday.
Yeah.
That maybe they haven't had that, or maybe they weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
So any thoughts on taking inspiration from that, from the Norwich defeat, and moving that forward, and maybe we're better suited to play teams up the top half of the table now with this Lambert approach?
Two things on that. One, we did tend to, we have generally got our better results against the lower teams. I mean, our wins were over Rotherham and Wigan, who are not, you know, who are struggling teams. I think teams could easily underestimate us in the coming weeks, though. Mm. That's the one huge thing I would say. The more knowledgeable fans who are watching us before the games are picking up on the fact that we're actually getting better than we were. But I also think, this might be wishful thinking, I think we, because this is such a streetwise league, I think on the Norwich front, I think other teams will have seen what we did.
Yes.
And probably Alex Neil did, and others will, and say, actually, they can be got at, and this is how you do it. You yes. fight fire with fire, you take the game to them, you don't let them get into any sort of a pattern, and you shut down their two holding midfielders. Don't let them get the ball out that way, so therefore you can compress them. Yeah.
It was no surprise that we were going after Vrančić, was there on Saturday?
No question. That was the idea.
The one player that was doing that most of all was Skuse. He was missing last night through a virus, I think. Craig, Fim75, appreciate the dirty work that Skuse does, or did when he was fully fit, but are the younger midfielders better suited to the playing that pivotal role, receiving the ball in tight spaces and progressively passing / carrying the ball up the pitch? Dan's the natural successor? I guess there's always questions about Skuse, because it always seems to coincide with a decent result, doesn't it? Any thoughts on thoughts there about... whether the younger players are better suited for that role?
It's a brilliant question. It's a really, really brilliant question. I don't know the answer. I've thought about it. I saw the question earlier today, and I've been turning it over, because
I'm not sure it's Downs.
No,
I still think that Downs is a little bit too raw, and mentally, I don't think he's quite there. Nolan, I wonder whether Nolan can do that role, because I think what last night showed me as well is you don't necessarily need a defensive midfielder in there as such, because Skuse isn't that. Chalobah isn't that, but Chalobah sat, but he also moved around and was more active with the ball.
Yeah,
I wonder whether maybe that strictly defensive midfielder model is now a bit out of date.
That's a good. You could be right. I mean, Skuse always has said his instinct and his gift is to spot danger 5 seconds before anyone else. And you could see, therefore, why Mick absolutely adored him, because, you know, again, mitigating risk is what he does brilliantly. I honestly don't. It's a question of balance always with midfield. I guess it's a question of who you're playing and the nature of the threat that you're up against through the centre. Some games you might need to have an out-and-out sitter in there like Skuse, who will actually go around a Praetorian guard in front of the back pair, and, you know, who will...
Yeah, if you're up against it, maybe,
guard the defence. And particularly, I felt, you know, if you're missing both Collins and Chambers at the back, and you've got a very inexperienced centre-back pair, you know, that's where you always feel with Nsiala, I always like to see because he can switch off, having somebody there just to, you know, just to protect him. So so you're looking at the balance that way. But for years, I've always believed Skuse has to be in there. But having seen what Chalobah did the other night, I found myself going, whoa, hang on. For the dynamic type of football we're playing, it may not just be Skuse and another. It might be, you know, we might be looking at alternatives. It was a bit of a light bulb moment, I have to say. I don't know the answer, but it's certainly, if not Skuse, somebody of Chalobah's caliber to do that would be good. Yeah,
Chalobah's caliber.
Yeah, great question.
Yeah,
great,
thanks,
question.
Craig. Tim Pashley, will Lambert in the stand be a big miss, presumably for his touchline antics? Or, but he's a motivator, isn't he?
Yes. Just to have a screen in the dressing room for the home games, just a screen with Paul Lambert there, just have him outside, you know, with a microphone or something. I don't know. He's I would have thought not, in terms of the way the information could be communicated down. It's not ideal, though, because he is more of a motivator. But I'm never sure that's a huge percentage of it. And I did love the way he went into the dressing room anyways. Just stick two fingers up at the authorities, you know, to hell with the world, I'm going in, don't stop me. I think, you know, he's got all week to motivate them, so hopefully it's just a question of the small tactical detail. And to be fair, you could argue, and we've heard this before from previous clubs, that Lambert, even the Norwich fans have said that Lambert wasn't always a subtle tactician. He was the one who could actually get them fired up and get them running through brick walls. So in terms of the kind of the gritty tactical analysis, Lambert in conversation with whoever's doing it, maybe a halftime tactical brief is maybe what they might need more than just somebody going in and just saying, you know, once more onto the breach. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Good question.
I think you spotted this one earlier. So it's our mate Mullet. This is an interesting one. This is one, I don't, he asked this quite a lot. A cynic might suggest Lambert is simply Mick without the wins. Are the differences with 2012 just down to the success on the pitch rather than off it? I tried to drill into this one and whether a cynic was him. I suspect I think he's a bit dubious about Lampard. I think probably he was expecting a little bit more from Lambert in terms of results maybe at this stage. And I think a few people are, but I might be wrong. Apologies, Molly, if I've misquoted you there.
There are no absolute parallels here, and there are two things you've got to factor in. One, Lambert didn't have a loan window, so he actually wasn't able to do anything for about 8 weeks. That was going back to, I remember Dave saying it on one of the preview shows, you know, we're talking about it in November, you know, that this was an issue. Could we get to Christmas and be vaguely in touch? Was that's the first point you've got to make. And I also think, and I will keep saying this every week, I think Hurst did a more effective job at wrecking the team than Jewell. Mm. And I think Lambert has been handed a much worse situation to deal with. He destroyed the team on every level. I always bang on about balance.
It's more the mental stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's everything. It's the mental, it's the tactical balance, losing our strikers, not replacing Carter Vickers and Webster. And then what you were left with, bringing in too many inadequate players and just too many in quantity as well. And then destroying the confidence of the ones that you were left with, both the senior players and the ones who you were trying to build up. You know, he couldn't have done a better job. I calumny on Hurst for what he did to the club. It was quite remarkable. So in that sense, I would, if you'd handed Lambert mixed set of circumstances, the thing I always remember with Mick, the lack of balance was, for example, there was a lack of midfield and the milky defending Mick used to talk about. I think Lambert could have actually done a similar job to Mick at fixing that with a loan window as well. He'd have probably gone about it a different way. We'd have been more on the front foot. But I think, God knows, if you were to put Mick into Lambert's shoes now, he probably wouldn't have taken the job, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean,
you could argue. Yeah. It's another good question. But I think the parallels aren't... The fundamental thing, I think Lambert was handed a bigger crock than Mick was handed.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. Yeah.
Amy Downs, our friend Amy. If Chambers and Collins are fit, who do you play in defence? Given that neither of them played on Wednesday, I think is the inference there.
Collins over Chambers. I fear for Collins that he might end up being a bit like Ibrahim Sonko when he played for us. An absolutely brilliant defender, but just very prone to soft tissue injuries late in his career, but brilliant when he's available. As a pure defender, I would prefer Collins alongside someone like Pennington. I think as a unit, they'd be fine. But then again, you've got Chambers' leadership skills. So I think it's a balancing act. I think if you had Collins with Chambers' leadership skills, but Collins leads by example as well. So, but that's, you know, a hard call. But Collins over Chambers for me, if you're going to put one of them in.
Thought on Knudsen at centre-back as well.
I did wonder about that. You know, he did well. The famous game against Aston Villa, the 1-0 win we had a few years ago, where Knudsen played left centre back, and that is his perfect role. We don't know what happened with Stoke, if anything did or if it didn't, but he would be one of my first names on the team sheet on Saturday, if only to prove a point.
Okay.
Just a thought, and that's something. It's just we don't know what went on. We've no clue. But that's one thing I would say. If they did screw up over. Not, you know, the fact that not Knudsen is their left back at Stoke, you know, that's an interesting one. But I'm comfortable with Knudsen as a centre back, as comfortable as I am with him as a left back. And if things hadn't unraveled so badly this year, I always felt that Knudsen could have, in a slightly Mickish way, been Chambers' successor in the team because of the leadership and the slightly headbanging nature that he. Wow. You know, he's an absolute firebrand, but that's not necessarily technically brilliant with the ball, but that same warrior kind of thing. I don't know if we need to agree with that or not.
I'm asking questions now, apologies for this. Everyone who's tweeted in, do you think Collins at centre back on Saturday would have made a difference Sunday against Norwich? Dave made the point on the flagship show.
Yeah, it would have, no question. He'd have stabilised them. There would have been a greater sense of calm. I think it would have helped against Derby as well. I think we're so cold in those early minutes. Someone like Collins in there, he can read the danger, he can see it. It's familiarity almost, I'd say, more than anything else. Yeah, I agree.
Harvey Davies, out of which former ITFC managers would be the best Valentine's date, given it's Valentine's Day? Who's going to buy the best presents? That's got to be it. Or who's going to take you to the nicest restaurant? Who's got a wine cellar? Maybe it's Mr. Cobbold. Maybe it's Mr. John.
Mr. John. Oh, Mr. John would be great, though. You wouldn't get home.
You'd be absolutely sozzled. It'd be brilliant.
You'd be, yeah, you would. You, yeah. His famous quote, which he, it's in his book, he says when he went, and the Aberdeen, apparently, when we played Aberdeen, was it in the, I think it was the year after we won the UEFA Cup, the first round, and they knocked us out. And he sent them, he said he wrote it, it was a piece of guff, and they framed it in the boardroom because what he wrote was, "What little I can remember, I will never forget," which is a great Mr. It's a great Mr. John one-liner. But you know, Mr. John for a Valentine's night would be hilarious. It would be you know, you wouldn't get to, you know, you'd be up all night. It would be quite memorable. But in terms of I don't know, Burley's quite a smooth character. I would have thought he'd, you know,
Valentino, he'd, wasn't he called Valentino?
Valentino. I could see him being very, you know, very suave, and he'd, you know, he'd put on a, you know, he'd be very attentive. He'd be very attentive. Yeah.
Someone suggested Paul Jewell, but I think that's a different type of evening. No, it might involve a dark car park or something. I don't know. Exactly.
No.
Let's not go there. Barry Mann. I'm moving on quickly, Harry. I'm moving on. I regret saying it straight away. I thought, Barry Mann says, I thought we played very well last night against Derby. Do you think this could be the new formation we play for the rest of the season? I think we do. More his thought about Edwards, who kind of disappeared. It appears that Edwards maybe has had an injury and it's coming back. But I don't think there's, in a diamond, if we're sticking with this diamond, I don't think there's a place for Edwards in the team, really, is there?
No, there isn't. Not really. No. If we are playing, or if it's the 4-3-1-2, which is a similar thing, it's not generally... You're looking for the midfielders or one of the strikers. If it's not the defender overlapping, it'll be one of the wide midfielders, or it'll be one of the strikers pulling out to allow space for the others to come forward. So I don't know. I still think Edwards defensively did himself no favours against Bristol City. I keep going back to that game. The way he left. I know we, poor old Spence. He seems history now. Poor old Jordan Spence, but he was quite unprotected at the time.
And I'll just go back to Accrington as well, where it felt like he didn't even turn up to the match, you know.
Yeah. It's
so I think it'll be difficult for him.
Wingers, eh? Yeah.
Quick one from Paul English. Is Colin Quana the only footballer ever who gets shorter when he jumps? We said he wouldn't be good in the air. You said he wouldn't be good in the air.
Yeah.
Or no, he's not as good in the air as you think.
No, he's not. He looks as if he should be, but it's the tortoise thing, isn't it? We said it, Huddersfield fans said it. It's one of those strange things. But and opponents will know this anyway, you know, that he's... it's just some people just, you know, who is it? Was it Tim Cahill was brilliant, even though he was quite small. He just had a natural ability in the air. And Joey Garner, again, isn't the tallest player in the world for us. And he was always the one you targeted for goal kicks. Mick used to do it. Every, you know, metronomically, everybody in a little postage stamp from the goal kick, and Joey ready for the knock on.
John Walters as well.
Walters as well, exactly. Yeah. Kwana's a funny one. I still think it's interesting because if we're playing narrow and Kwana's in there, he's technically not a winger, but he is a player who could pull wide and then swing the ball in. I don't know, but we'll see what Lambert sees in him. But I just don't see him as a target man that way. But anyway,
two more, because I think we're almost at a whole set. I think I missed a couple because we've talked about it, or because maybe they're a bit expansive for today. A combination of a question from Seb, my mate Seb, and Tim Donovan, who both ask, assuming we stick with the diamond formation, both of them are suggesting, when is the time where the loney players are bombed out of the team and replaced? So Seb cites Kwana and Keane in terms of Harrison or Jackson. He also asks whether we think Keane would be a good signing in the summer. I think he would. And Tim asks about Chalobah. And bringing in one of our young players for Chalobah. Any thoughts on more of this approach about if the formation appears to lock in and work?
Yeah.
At what point is it loanees over our own players, or is it not?
Well, assuming the worst here, I presume. So there's nothing to play for, in which case then you're into kind of a slightly weird pre-season.
Well, that might be a criteria for it, Harry. That if you're saying when relegation is certain, then that might be the time to do it.
But equally, it's not good for the players who you are thinking about next year by chopping and changing up against streetwise championship teams and getting battered. You can't just think, oh, well, they're not going to be with us next year. I think all things being equal, Lambert would prefer to play the players who he's kind of looking to for looking to for August, as it were. But I don't think you can be wedded to that, because there's no point in putting them all out there and then they just get murdered. Mm-hmm. You've got to balance it. It's such a dangerous league that way. It could go badly wrong. So
in terms of Harrison, obviously.
Well, Harrison's the one, isn't it? No, that's not too much. No, less up front, I would say, absolutely. With Harrison, I would put him in, okay. Where possible, because I think we're all on the same mind that what we have seen, we like. But can we see a little bit more, please? Yeah.
And let's aim with a positive. James Gulk, another West Midlander, Warwickshire even, actually. Could this be one of the most positive, in inverted commas, relegation in our history, I think he means, not in history, maybe he does mean in the entirety of football history. This season has been a near disaster on the pitch, results-wise, but off it, the whole club hasn't been this positive and together since the Big Fat Joe era, circa 2005.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that, Harry?
I think there's a lot in that. It's a weird season. I mean, it has been grim. You know, week in, week out, walking home after another defeat, you're thinking, oh God, you know, and the 2-0-ery of it all. Every week, another 2-0 kind of thing. It does leave you quite flat. I think if we are seeing these green shoots appearing and we are seeing an identity taking shape, I think that will trump the fact. I think our expectations of relegation have all now been, we've all sort of priced that into the season.
We're in acceptance mode, aren't we?
Are. I think so now. And I mean, the thing that killed me actually was Reading's winner against Blackburn.
I think Reading,
it's always one team not big enough, which is Rotherham, and then two others which have had other problems, which is us and Bolton, I would say, to go down. But if it is that, it feels that way anyway, but at the moment. It's a good question. I think we could come out of it with, if we have that vision for what the future will hold, we can then take the summer and then hit January, or hit August, I should say, in, you know, with a bit of momentum, which would be fantastic.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Mm. And in that frame of mind, no reason to fear League One either.
I
saw Oxford Sunderland, as we talked about last week.
Yes, indeed.
Sunderland were fourth and didn't really show up, and Oxford were okay. They were dominated the game, actually, but again, no reason to fear either of those two teams. You know, the way that we were playing at the moment, personnel wise, there might be differences, but hopefully we can enjoy League One if it does happen. Brilliant stuff. Thank you everyone for your questions. Sorry for those that we didn't get the chance to read out. A few plugs to finish off with. This is an Easter egg for those of you who have made it, the loyal frequent flyers on the preview show who have made it all this way to the end. Blue Monday Live is this Saturday at the Curve Bar. There is the possibility of extra tickets if people have not been fortunate enough to get one. Ben has had some returns. If you tweet us at Blue Monday RTFC, give Ben a shout. He'll give you the details. It will be kind of first come, first served, and I'm not pretending that there are hundreds of tickets available. There's a handful, I don't know, something like that maybe. So if you're keen, if you've not got a chance, tweet us ASAP and give Ben a shout, and hopefully we can sort you out. But as I say, no promises there. And we'll be both there, won't we? We'll be. There's no combined 11 this week, and I haven't mentioned my shirts either. I need to point out my one shirt. Sorry, I've finally got myself It's the 89-92 promotion winning shirt, in lovely, pristine condition. Smells of bold 2-1 now. but we had an unbeaten 2-match run against Stoke in the 89-90 season, so that's tenuous. But yeah, we'll be there on Saturday. Looking forward to it, Harry. We'll be doing a bit of a mini Wigan preview, and then Daryl's combined team for Derby, because we did Stoke a few weeks back.
Do we need to do a shout out for Twitter on that to let people know?
Yeah, great shout. So I think I'm going to do those as Twitter polls. We'll get that closing probably last thing on Friday night, maybe first thing Saturday morning, so I can write that all up. And then we'll share that with everyone on Saturday night. But looking forward to it.
Can't wait. Really, it should be a really good laugh. Really, it should be a really enjoyable evening, irrespective of the result. And hopefully, we'll see what Stoke team turns up. But hopefully, we can carry on the momentum from Derby.
And some nice positivity. And there won't be a flagship show on Sunday. But for those of you unable to make it on Saturday night, we'll be putting out either some best bits or definitely live recordings of the meaty chunks of the show. So you won't be missing out on too much. In terms of your plugs, Harry, do you want to quickly tell us about your blogs and all that kind of stuff?
Just to say the notes for Stoke with formations, videos of the last three games, etc., will be up Friday lunchtime on TWTD, and you can find it on at Harry from Bath on Twitter. I link any of the previews I do on the written work like that will go up on Twitter that way, at Harry from Bath.
Great stuff. We'll probably do an extended version of our Wigan preview next week as normal. As I mentioned, you can find the channel at Blue Monday ITFC. You can find me at Ips Rich. And we are going to end with something in memory of Gordon Banks, the great Gordon Banks, yeah. Harry. You found indeed. A quote. He's a Stoke alumni, isn't he, Gordon Banks?
He is indeed, yes.
So, yeah.
Greatly loved. And the oat cake, a bit like when we lost poor Kevin earlier in the season, there was an outpouring of deep affection for him. Modesty was the huge theme that came through, that a man full of class off the pitches. He was on it, humble, down to earth, always willing to talk all things Stoke. And there was an echo. This reminded me, it reminded me of Terry Butcher, actually, the affection with this part of it. A few years ago, Gordon gave up his time to come and manage an oatcake mix and match team, which is their TWTD, for a play on the pitch at Britannia Stadium. Those on the home team will remember his rousing and amusing pre-match team talk out on the pitch and how he posed for pictures and signed autographs without a care in the world. He really, really loved the team, and his modesty came through. And I also, I dug out from my shelves behind, it's one of my favourite. It's a lovely memoir from another era, Banksy, his autobiography, which it's I mean, the guy's humility is wonderful. And just really some of the final paragraphs, just a quick read to finish. He talks about just how fortunate he was. He says, "I've also been fortunate enough to make a great career in what I believe is the greatest sport on earth. Football is a serious business, but the key to enjoying it to the full and to surviving in the game is not always to take it too seriously. That has been my philosophy for both football and life. Of course, sometimes seriousness has its place, but in life, as in football, for everything there is a season." And he talks then about how much it had given him, about he played alongside and against some of the greatest names ever to have played. No money could replace that wonderful experience. And he also then finally thanks the players and particularly the supporters who in turn have touched his life. He says, "Collectively, you've given me much more than a lad from Tinsley could ever have expected. Words can never express my true gratitude. Some people think there's no place for sentiment in football. There is now." Great man. Great man. Absolutely. Great man. Yeah.
Thanks for that, Harry.
Cheers. Well, if we don't see you on Saturday, have a fantastic weekend.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.